Chapter 48. It's you, Natalia Viktorovna. Perhaps you are surprised. At this late hour. But, you see, I remembered our conversations in that garden. I thought really it was your wish, that I should without loss of time. So I came. No other reason. Simply to tell. He spoke with difficulty. I noticed that, and remembered his declaration to the man in the shop, that he was going out, because he needed air. If that was his object, then it was clear, that he had miserably failed. With downcast eyes and lowered head he made an effort, to pick up the strangled phrase. To tell what I have heard myself only today. Through the door he had not closed I had a view of the drawing room. It was lighted only by a shaded lamp. Mrs. Alden's eyes could not support either gas or electricity. It was a comparatively big room, and in contrast with the strongly lighted anteroom its length was lost in semi-transparent gloom backed by heavy shadows, and on that ground I saw the motionless figure of Mrs. Alden, inclined slightly forward, with a pale hand resting on the arm of the chair. She did not move. With the window before her as he had no longer, that attitude suggesting expectation. The blind was down, and outside there was only the night sky harboring a thunder cloud, and the town indifferent and hospitable in its cold, almost scornful, toleration a respectable town of refuge to which all these sorrows and hopes were nothing. Her white head was bowed. The thought that the real drama of autocracy is not played on the great stage of politics came to me as, fated to be a spectator, I had this other glimpse behind the scenes, something more profound than the words and gestures of the public play. I had the certitude that this mother refused in her heart to give her son up after all. It was more than Rachel's inconsolable mourning, it was something deeper, more inaccessible in its frightful tranquility. Lost in the ill-defined mass of the high back chair, her white, inclined profile suggested the contemplation of something in her lap, as though a beloved head were resting there. I had this glimpse behind the scenes, and then Miss Alden, passing by the young man, shut the door. It was not done without hesitation. For a moment I thought that she would go to her mother, but she sent in only an anxious glance. Perhaps if Mrs. Alden had moved. But no. There was in the immobility of that bloodless face the dreadful aloofness of suffering without remedy. Meantime the young man kept his eyes fixed on the floor. The thought that he would have to repeat the story he had told already was intolerable to him. He had expected to find the two women together. And then, he had said to himself, it would be over for all time, for all time. "'Tis lucky I don't believe in another world," he had thought cynically. Alone in his room after having posted his secret letter, he had regained a certain measure of composure by writing in his secret diary. He was aware of the danger of that strange self-indulgence. He alludes to it himself, but he could not refrain. It calmed him, it reconciled him to his existence. He sat there scribbling by the light of a solitary candle, till it occurred to him that having heard the explanation of Alden's arrest, as put forward by Sofia Antonovna, it behoved him to tell these ladies himself. They were certain to hear the tale through some other channel, and then his abstention would look strange, not only to the mother and sister of Alden, but to other people also. Having come to this conclusion, he did not discover in himself any marked reluctance to face the necessity, and very soon an anxiety to be done with it began to torment him. He looked at his watch. No, it was not absolutely too late. The 15 minutes with Mrs. Alden were like the revenge of the unknown. That white face, that weak distinct voice, that head, at first turned to him eagerly, then, after a while, bowed again and motionless in the dim, still light of the room in which his words which he tried to subdue resounded so loudly had troubled him like some strange discovery. And there seemed to be a secret obstinacy in that sorrow, something he could not understand. At any rate, something he had not expected. Was it hostile? But it did not matter. Nothing could touch him now. In the eyes of the revolutionists, there was now no shadow on his past. The phantom of Alden had been indeed walked over, was left behind lying powerless and passive on the pavement covered with snow. And this was the phantom's mother, consumed with grief and white as a ghost. He had felt a pitying surprise. But that, of course, was of no importance. Mothers did not matter. He could not shake off the poignant impression of that silent, quiet, white-haired woman, but a sort of sternness crept into his thoughts. These were the consequences. Well, what of it? Am I then on a bed of roses? He had exclaimed to himself, sitting at some distance with his eyes fixed upon that figure of sorrow. He had said all he had to say to her, and when he had finished, as he had not uttered a word. As he had turned away her head while he was speaking. The silence which had fallen on his last words had lasted for 5 minutes or more. What did it mean? Before its incomprehensible character, he became conscious of anger in his stern mood, the old anger against Alden reawakened by the contemplation of Alden's mother. And was it not something like enviousness which gripped his heart, as if of a privilege denied to him alone of all the men that had ever passed through this world? It was the other who had attained to repose, and yet continued to exist in the affection of that mourning old woman, in the thoughts of all these people posing for lovers of humanity. It was impossible to get rid of him. "'Tease myself whom I have given up to destruction,' thought Razumov. "'He has induced me to do it. I can't shake him off.' Alarmed by that discovery, he got up, and strode out of the silent, dim room with its silent old woman in the chair, that mother. He never looked back. It was frankly a flight. But on opening the door, he saw his retreat cut off. There was the sister. He had never forgotten the sister, only he had not expected to see her then or ever anymore, perhaps. Her presence in the anteroom was as unforeseen as the apparition of her brother had been. Razumov gave a start, as though he had discovered himself cleverly trapped. He tried to smile, but could not manage it, and lowered his eyes. "Must I repeat that silly story now?" he asked himself, and felt a sinking sensation. Nothing solid had passed his lips since the day before, but he was not in a state to analyze the origins of his weakness. He meant to take up his hat and depart with as few words as possible, but Miss Alden's swift movement to shut the door took him by surprise. He half turned after her, but without raising his eyes, passively, just as a feather might stir in the disturbed air. The next moment she was back in the place as he had started from, with another half turn on his part, so that they came again into the same relative positions. "Yes, yes," she said hurriedly. "I'm very grateful to you, Kirill Sidorovich, for coming at once like this. Only, I wish I had. Did mother tell you? I wonder what she could have told me, that I did not know before," he said, obviously to himself, but perfectly audible. "Because I always did know it," he added louder, as if in despair. He hung his head. He had such a strong sense of Natalia Alden's presence, that to look at her, he felt would be a relief. It was she who had been haunting him now. He had suffered that persecution ever since, as he had suddenly appeared before him in the garden of the Villa Borel with an extended hand, and the name of her brother on her lips. The anteroom had a row of hooks on the wall nearest to the outer door, while against the wall opposite there stood a small dark table and one chair. The paper, bearing a very faint design, was all but white. The light of an electric bulb high up under the ceiling searched that clear square box into its four bare corners, crudely, without shadows, a strange stage for an obscure drama. "What do you mean?" asked Miss Alden. "Had it that you knew always?" He raised his face, pale, full of unexpressed suffering. But that look in his eyes of dull, absent obstinacy, which struck and surprised everybody he was talking to, began to pass away. It was as though he were coming to himself in the awakened consciousness of that marvelous harmony of feature, of lines, of glances, of voice, which made of the girl before him a being so rare, outside, and, as it were, above the common notion of beauty. He looked at her so long that she colored slightly. "What is it that you knew?" she repeated vaguely. That time he managed to smile. "Indeed, if it had not been for a word of greeting or two, I would doubt whether your mother was aware at all of my existence. You understand?" Natalia Alden nodded. Her hands moved slightly by her side. "Yes. Is it not heartbreaking? As he has not shed a tear, yet not a single tear. Not a tear. And you, Natalia Viktorovna? You have been able to cry?" "I have. And then I am young enough, Kirillo Sidorovich, to believe in the future. But when I see my mother so terribly distracted, I almost forget everything. I ask myself whether one should feel proud or only resigned. We had such a lot of people coming to see us. There were other strangers who wrote asking for permission to call to present their respects. It was impossible to keep our door shut forever. You know that Peter Ivanovich himself. Oh yes, there was much sympathy, but there were persons who exulted openly at that death. Then, when I was left alone with poor mother, all this seemed so wrong in spirit, something not worth the price she is paying for it. But directly I heard you were here in Geneva, Kirillo Sidorovich, I felt that you were the only person who could assist me. And comforting a bereaved mother? Yes." He broke in a manner which made her open her clear unsuspecting eyes. "But there is a question of fitness. Has this occurred to you?" There was a breathlessness in his utterance which contrasted with the monstrous hint of mockery in his intention. "Why?" whispered Natalia Alden with feeling. "Oh, more fit than you?" He had a convulsive movement of exasperation, but controlled himself. "Indeed. Directly you heard that I was in Geneva, before even seeing me, it is another proof of that confidence which..." All at once his tone changed, became more incisive and more detached. "Men are poor creatures, Natalia Viktorovna. They have no intuition of sentiment. In order to speak fittingly to a mother of her lost son, one must have had some experience of the filial relation. It is not the case with me, if you must know the whole truth. Your hopes have to deal here with a breast unwarmed by any affection, apostrophe as the poet says. That does not mean it is insensible," he added in a lower tone. "I am certain your heart is not unfeeling," said Miss Alden softly. "No. It is not as hard as a stone," he went on in the same introspective voice, and looking as if his heart were lying as heavy as a stone in that unwarmed breast of which he spoke. "Oh, not so hard. But how to prove what you give me credit for, that's another question. No one has ever expected such a thing from me before. No one whom my tenderness would have been of any use to. And now you come. You. Now. No, Natalia Viktorovna. It's too late. You come too late. You must expect nothing from me." She recoiled from him a little, though he had made no movement, as if as he had seen some change in his face, charging his words with the significance of some hidden sentiment they shared together. To me, the silent spectator, they looked like two people becoming conscious of a spell which had been lying on them ever since they first set eyes on each other. Had either of them cast a glance then in my direction, I would have opened the door quietly and gone out. But neither did, and I remained, every fear of indiscretion lost in the sense of my enormous remoteness from their captivity within the somber horizon of Russian problems, the boundary of their eyes, of their feelings, the prison of their souls. "Frank, courageous," Miss Alden controlled her voice in the midst of her trouble. "What can this mean?" she asked, as if speaking to herself. "It may mean that you have given yourself up to vain imaginings, while I have managed to remain amongst the truth of things, and the realities of life are Russian life such as they are. They are cruel," she murmured. and ugly. Don't forget that and ugly. Look where you like. Look near you, here abroad where you are, and then look back at home, whence you came. One must look beyond the present. Her tone had an ardent conviction. The blind can do that best. I have had the misfortune to be born clear-eyed. And if you only knew what strange things I have seen. What amazing and unexpected apparitions, but why talk of all this? On the contrary, I want to talk of all this with you, she protested with earnest serenity. The somber humors of her brother's friend left her unaffected, as though that bitterness, that suppressed anger, were the signs of an indignant rectitude. She saw that he was not an ordinary person, and perhaps she did not want him to be other than he appeared to her trustful eyes. S, with you especially, she insisted. If you of all the Russian people in the world. A faint smile dwelt for a moment on her lips. I'm like poor mother in a way. I too seem unable to give up our beloved dad, who, don't forget, was all in all to us. I don't want to abuse your sympathy, but you must understand that it is in you that we can find all that is left of his generous soul. I was looking at him. Not a muscle of his face moved in the least. And yet, even at the time, I did not suspect him of insensibility. It was a sort of rapt thoughtfulness. Then he stirred slightly. You are going, Kirillo Sidorovich? She asked. I? Going? Where? Oh yes, but I must tell you first. Dada's voice was muffled, and he forced himself to produce it with visible repugnance, as if speech were something disgusting or deadly. Hat story, you know the story I heard this afternoon. I know the story already, she said sadly. You know it? Have you correspondence in St. Petersburg too? No. It's Sofia Antonovna. I have seen her just now. She sends you her greetings. She is going away tomorrow. He had lowered at last his fascinated glance. She too was looking down, and standing thus before each other in the glaring light, between the four bare walls, they seemed brought out from the confused immensity of the eastern borders to be exposed cruelly to the observation of my western eyes. And I observed them. There was nothing else to do. My existence seemed so utterly forgotten by these two, that I dared not now make a movement. And I thought to myself that, of course, they had to come together, the sister and the friend of that dead man. The ideas, the hopes, the aspirations, the cause of freedom, expressed in their common affection for Victor Halton, the moral victim of autocracy, all this must draw them to each other fatally. Her very ignorance, and his loneliness to which he had alluded so strangely must work to that end. And, indeed, I saw that the work was done already. Of course. It was manifest that they must have been thinking of each other for a long time before they met. As he had the letter from that beloved brother kindling her imagination by the severe praise attached to that one name, and for him to see that exceptional girl was enough. The only cause for surprise was his gloomy aloofness before her clearly expressed welcome. But he was young, and however austere, and devoted to his revolutionary ideals, he was not blind. The period of reserve was over. He was coming forward in his own way. I could not mistake the significance of this late visit, for in what he had to say there was nothing urgent. The true cause dawned upon me. He had discovered that he needed her, and she was moved by the same feeling. It was the second time that I saw them together, and I knew that next time they met I would not be there, either remembered or forgotten. I would have virtually ceased to exist for both these young people. I made this discovery in a very few moments. Meantime, Natalia Halton was telling Razumov briefly of our peregrinations from one end of Geneva to the other. While speaking, she raised her hands above her head to untie her veil, and that movement displayed for an instant the seductive grace of her youthful figure, clad in the simplest of mourning. In the transparent shadow the hat rim threw on her face, her gray eyes had an enticing luster. Her voice, with its unfeminine yet exquisite timbre, was steady, and she spoke quickly, frank, unembarrassed. As she justified her action by the mental state of her mother, a spasm of pain marred the generously confiding harmony of her features. I perceived that with his downcast eyes he had the air of a man who is listening to a strain of music, rather than to articulated speech. And in the same way, after as he had ceased, he seemed to listen yet, motionless, as if under the spell of suggestive sound. He came to himself, muttering, "Yes, yes." As he has not shed a tear. She did not seem to hear what I was saying. I might have told her anything. She looked as if no longer belonging to this world. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.